Rack up the deals on everything summer at Nordstrom Rack and get brands you love up to 60% off. Vince, Kate Spade New York, Steve Madden, Madewell, Nike, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Just in dresses, tops, shorts, sandals, sneakers, denim, luxury bags, and sunglasses. Rack up the deals today and save up to 60% on summer at your Nordstrom Rack store.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome, everyone, to this bonus edition of Monday Match Analysis. I'm Gil Gross. This is the post-Rome 2024 Roland Garros Power Rankings. It is the most important edition of the Power Rankings because while there is likely to be some changes after Geneva, I will not go in as much depth, not nearly as long, on whatever the final Power Rankings update will be. This is going to be the time where I've pored over all the data, looked at a ton of stats, and I've gotten to a place where I feel good about where the rankings are at heading into the French Open. Draw is coming out in just a couple of days. Now, I know some people don't understand the power rankings or how they work. I just don't want to waste any time before I get into it. So I will write in the description exactly what the power rankings are and why they often differ from my Roland Garros predictions, which I will make after the draw comes out. These are not my predictions. These are the power rankings. It's different. Before I start, however, just one thing, the draw. Have you subscribed to my weekly tennis newsletter, a curation of the best content on the internet? It is the draw. The last edition came out just this morning, but you can still view the web version if you subscribe. If you go to thedraw.tennis/subscribe for no cost at all. It was a really exciting week of the draw. I had updates on Jannik Sinner from an injury standpoint, Alcaraz injury, Djokovic injury, Jiří Lehečka. So all of those injury updates are in there. A great interview with Simona Halep that John Wertheim did for Tennis Channel. Federer and Nadal, have you seen the Louis Vuitton ad campaign where they actually answer some very interesting questions about their career in a very beautiful setting and a well-produced video? And the last thing I'll tease is a super interesting article with Monfils where he was asked about being an underachiever, being someone who's seen as lazy, and his responses to kind of being pressed off of that topic in an article for The Guardian was very, very interesting. So that's all in the latest edition of The Draw. Link is in the description. Again, thedraw.tennis/subscribe. All right, normally I start with next out, the players who didn't make my top 10. But I want to go a step further here. And I want to address the players who I considered putting in the next out, and they didn't quite make it. That starts with Grigor Dimitrov. He has never made a Roland Garros quarterfinal. He did not secure a top 50 win over the course of this clay swing. So even though I've really liked what I've seen from him over the course of the last 52 weeks, he's become basically upset proof, 28-3 against players outside the top 50 in the last year, and he's ninth in the race, so he's having a good season. Despite all these things, just not really seeing much on clay. You know, historically, it seems to negatively affect his game, and then this clay swing, there's really nothing to look at, so Dimitrov doesn't make it. Also, an honorable mention is Jan-Lennard Struff, who has had a really impressive record on the clay over the last 2 years. 18-9 in the last 2 years, a Masters 1000 final, a 500 title in Munich, plenty of really good wins, beat Ruud, beat Tsitsipas, beat Fritz. His clay losses this year are to Sinner, Alcaraz, and Tsitsipas. So, I mean, every loss is what I would call a good loss. So if you just look at Clay alone, Struff has a great case to be maybe an honorable mention for a next out for sure, but maybe even a top 10 guy. The knocks on Struff is, you know, he's played Roland Garros 10 times. He's got 9 wins total. So he's never made a run. And then if you just look at what he's done this year as a whole, 27th in the race, just hasn't been a consistent winner this year. Now, he's had some bad draws in this clay season. So you look at some losses that are early, but to great players. I can't give someone bonus points for having bad draws. You know, I'm not going to do that because who's to say he wouldn't have lost against somebody else? Nobody's to say. So again, I mean, it stinks to get bad draws, but I can't give him bonus points for that. So Struff to me doesn't make it. And then lastly, someone who has been in my next out, I believe the last few editions of the power rankings, but now I have him out of the picture completely, is Alex de Minaur. You know, the first 3 months of 2024 were great, but 0 clay court tour level finals. And he's never made the third round at Roland Garros. I think he has a great chance to change that and at least win a couple of matches in Paris for the first time. But just not enough there to put him in my next out. All right. I'm going to reveal the next out all at once, all 4 players. Here it is. Holger Rune, Hubert Hurkacz, Karen Khachanov, and Rafael Nadal. Now, 2 of those players were in the latest edition of the power rankings. Holger Rune came in, let me check this. He was at number 8 he was at 10 on May 5th. And Nadal was at number 7 on May 5th. So both of those guys fell out. Let's start with Rune. And if you go to last year, going into the French Open, Rune was 4th in the power rankings after making the final at Monte Carlo, winning Munich, and making another final in Rome. This clay season, the follow-up back to that, it has not been there. Monte Carlo was a good start with the tight loss to Sinner, but since then, losses to Struff, Griekspoor, and Baez. Now, not one of those losses is a really poor loss. They are all top 30 players. Griekspoor, maybe not top 30 on clay, but they're all like top 30 level players. Not one of those is a bad loss, but when you put all 3 together, not good by a Roland Garros title contender's standards, which that's what this is about. This is a power ranking of who's most likely to win the French Open. And those 3 losses in a row, to me, add up to a pretty disappointing clay court season. Since Roland Garros, as a whole, no big semifinals. That means 1,000s, slams, year-end championship. No big semifinals for Rune since RG last year. And the reason I pick RG last year is just, you know, that's 1 year of time. That doesn't bode well. So a bit underwhelming in the larger picture. Now, Roland Garros results are good. Quarterfinals in both of his previous appearances, losing to Casper Ruud twice. There hasn't been a noticeable best of 5 tax, if you look at the stats, but he has exited in the first 2 rounds at his last 2 majors. So the big problems for Rune is really the form over the last year of time and this clay season, just not up to snuff. And that's why he can't get into my top 10 as we head into the French Open. Let's go to Nadal now. First off, addressing Rome, because he went from 7th to next out. I'm not so much concerned with the loss to Hurkacz, although the score line isn't great. I'm more discouraged by getting into a 3-hour war with Zizou Bergs. That's what kind of shows me that Rafa is, you know, even level-wise, especially because it was a first round, because I'm very sensitive to the fact that physicality is a challenge right now. But coming into a first-round match, you'd want to see Rafa hit the ground running, beat Zizou Bergs easier than he did. And at this point, best of 5, huge unknown for Rafa. If we're talking about likelihood of winning the title, which is what we're talking about, it's hard to see any evidence, and evidence is also what we're talking about, that the physicality is there. Because, you know, both times he's gone 3 hours this year, he's lost the next match. And the last semifinal that Nadal has competed in was Roland Garros 2022. So it's been two whole years. Now, my eye test assessment has been pretty positive when it comes to Rafa. That doesn't matter here. I'm taking that out. It just doesn't matter for the power rankings. And with Di Minor falling out of the picture, Nadal hasn't beaten anyone on the power rankings. So that's very important to me, right? When I look at quality wins or even just the losses, I'm obviously stacking up. Like, I want to see someone who has some big wins. I want to see someone who's beaten some players who I've included in the power rankings. Nadal doesn't have that either. So, you know, despite the 14 RG titles, Nadal can't get in the top 10 for me at the moment. Karen Khachanov, somewhat on-brand clay court season for him because he's won multiple matches at every event he's played, but he didn't make a semifinal. So just solid. Not great, but very, very solid. He has played 7 French Opens. How do you think he did? Solid. Not great, solid. You know, 4 fourth-round finishes, 2 quarterfinal finishes. That to me, is incredibly impressive. It might be solid if we're talking about can Karen win the French, but by any other standard, that's like, whoa, that is crazy consistency. So that's second week of the French in 6 out of 7 main draw entries for Karen Khachanov. In general, best of 5 win rate is impeccable. 69%. Compare that to 54% for Masters 1000s. So I'm always going to give Khachanov a boost when it comes to slams. He is better at slams than he is in best of 3. One other stat that I kind of unearthed when I was looking at Khachanov, and I was considering, okay, really consistent at RG, consistent in best of 5, like should I put him top 10? His career record against top 10 players on clay is 4-15. So he is not a consistent giant killer. And that combined with the fact that he hasn't made a splashy run leading up to Roland Garros, I just don't feel like he's a great argument as a title contender. That's why he's in my next out. Also in my next out, rounding out this category, is Hubert Hurkacz. He's had the best clay court season of his career, 11-3 record. Entered, just to give you an idea, entered this clay season with a career mark of 23 wins, 25 losses. So big improvement there. The only knock on Hubie is quality wins. He hasn't beaten anyone in the top 10 of the power rankings. He's had 2 chances to do so. He lost to Fritz. He lost to Ruud. I also don't love his 2-7 record against top 20 players this year. I was surprised to see that because I do feel like Hurkacz has had a very solid 2024. But that's a pretty bad stat for him. He has also taken way too many upset defeats at majors, way too many early losses at slams. If you look at the last 3 years where Hurkacz has been consistently, at the very least, a top 20 player, and he has not lived up to that. He has not held seed oftentimes. Now, Australian Open this year was a nice quarterfinal run, nearly a semi, close match against Daniil Medvedev that at times it looked like he was going to win. But also, you know, the whole major thing, I don't feel like Hubie is a player who I feel better about than a major compared to, say, a Masters 1000. In fact, quite the contrary. So he is also a next out guy for me. Now let's get into the top 10. Here we go. I know I kind of spoiled 2 of them with what I just said about Hurkacz, but you don't know where they're going to end up. All right, coming in at number 10 is Nicholas Jarry, who was not on the next out as of the post-Madrid power rankings, but he makes the Rome final. I do not want to overreact to one event, but I don't think I am overreacting to one event because if you look at the last 52 weeks for Jarry, including Geneva and Roland Garros last year, so I'm looking at the last year as a whole on clay, Jarry is 16-8, 3 finals in 8 events, 5-2 versus top 20 players. Again, this is clay court in the last year. Wins over Zverev, Ruud, Paul, Alcaraz. Like, that is as good a haul as you can possibly get. So you look at what he's done on clay last 52 weeks. To me, that's undeniable. He deserves a spot in the top 10. Now, why is he so low? Well, the overall resume at Slams is not pretty. He has only once made the fourth round in his career. But that was Roland Garros last year. And again, I was encouraged to see that, okay, you know, made the second week in Paris a year ago. That's another thing that he can draw confidence from. And we'll see if he can stay hot, you know. Obviously, he's not a player who you feel like there's no chance that he's... Basically, you do feel like Jarry is the kind of player who can get upset. But if you look at the resume, it doesn't lie. And I like him at number 10. At number 9 is going to be Taylor Fritz, another guy who was not on the power rankings post-Madrid. That might have been my mistake, to be honest, because I don't think, obviously, Fritz didn't do anything so spectacular in Rome that, you know, he clearly deserved like a massive leap up. But when I was looking at the body of work, it just felt like to me that he deserved this spot.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Number 9. 3 or more wins in his last 3 clay court events. That is a Munich final, a Madrid semifinal, and a Rome quarterfinal. So that is an excellent clay court season for Taylor Fritz. He has never been past the third round of the French, but he has made back-to-back major quarterfinals. So we've gotten to a point with Taylor where there was a point where it was like, okay, best of five majors have been an issue for him. He's putting too much pressure on himself, or he's not managing the best of five. Like, something is going wrong where he's underperforming at slams. Back-to-back quarterfinals, to me, that is put to rest, which is a really good thing for Taylor, despite the fact that he's never gone on a run in Paris. Now, if you look at strength of opponent, to me, his placement also makes perfect sense. He beat Hurkacz and he beat Dimitrov this clay season, but he lost to, like, two of his losses are to guys who are going to come in above him. So I really am. I'm confident with his placement here, even when it comes to who he's beaten and who he's lost to this clay court season. Number eight is Daniil Medvedev. He drops down two spots after Rome. Not that Rome was terrible for Daniil, but overall, his clay season does not profile as a Roland Garros title contender. His overall record is 6 wins, 3 losses. The scoreline against Tommy in Rome is not what you want. He lost 6-1, 6-4. He did seem healthy. He did get through a couple of tough matches, barely beat Hamad Medvedev. I don't know if that's, an awesome result in itself, although Medvedev is, a really, really dangerous player, huge serve forehand weapons. Medvedev played a lot of good competition, but nobody in the top 10 of the power rankings. He did lose to Khachanov in Monte Carlo. So you look at the clay season overall, his best win, maybe Korda, maybe Draper. That's what Medvedev is lacking. Like, again, you look at the clay court season, it hasn't been disastrous. It hasn't been jump off the page bad. There's also just really nothing to feel great about. Like, he hasn't shown whatsoever, like he did last year, that he can beat one of these top guys on clay. Now, he comes in at number eight because he continues to be one of the best in the world in general. He's third in the race this year, and that kind of buoys him. Roland Garros, bad record for his career, 7-7, but he did start 0-4. It's been better as of late. He made the quarterfinal in 2021. He made the fourth round in 2022. And then you had the shock first round exit last year against Thiago Zajbacz-Wilcz, which was mostly a shock because he won Rome. He beat a lot of good players to win Rome as well. So I wonder what he came in. Let me see. He came in the power rankings at number three going to the French Open last year. So a lot further down here after what was a very pedestrian clay court season. At number seven is Andrei Rublev. He moves up two spots, although he didn't really do anything to move up two spots. It's mostly kind of, I guess, Nadal and Medvedev falling. Those are the two players who he jumped. He jumped Nadal and he jumped Medvedev. Rublev, the way I would describe his season, topsy-turvy. All things considered, he's fifth in the race. Madrid champion, doesn't hold as much weight for me as Monte Carlo or Rome, just because of the conditions. But what that title does do for Rublev is it really puts to rest any and all concerns about form and confidence, which existed coming into that tournament. Now, Rome was always a lost cause given his physical state. So I throw that out. Even though Rublev went out early-ish in Rome and struggled immensely to beat Marcos Giron, I just don't care. He was sick in Madrid. What do you expect? Sometimes you have to look at context, even though it's the power rankings and I'm really mostly diving into the data and the history. Despite all that, I don't care that he lost in Rome. He was going to hit a wall. He was definitely going to hit a wall. Then you look at Rublev's slam resume. It reveals an extremely obvious pattern of results. You cannot classify it as good. You cannot classify it as bad. Both are wrong. What you have to do is classify it as what it is. His consistency has been excellent, terrific. He has made the quarterfinals at 6 of his last 7 slam main draws. He's also 0-10 in quarterfinals. So it is what it is. Look, 8 players make the quarters at a major. Therefore, this is not how I get to Rublev's ranking, but for him to be around 8 through 6, 6, 7, 8, like, to me, that's where Rublev deserves to be coming into most majors, because time and time and time and time and time again, we leave majors thinking, yeah, it was probably the sixth or seventh or eighth or, you know, fifth best player at that slam, exiting in the quarters. And in terms of surface, he's had nearly identical success at all four. But his two Masters titles are on clay. So, little boost on the clay just because, you know, he's won two big titles on the surface. But all in all, Rublev, seven, feels pretty safe, pretty solid, pretty regular. Not going to go crazy over the Madrid title and kind of vault him too high as a result of that. Coming in at number six is Casper Ruud, who drops down two spots after a first match exit against Mimir Kecmanovic in Rome. This is where it gets interesting, and this is probably the first selection that I expect to see a lot of disagreement on. Ruud's consistency has been great this year. 31-10 record, fourth in the race. I've loved his 2024. Monte Carlo, runner-up. Barcelona, champion. Beat Tsitsipas and Djokovic, which is maybe the best collection of big wins out of anyone this clay swing. Back-to-back Roland Garros finalists. I go down those, I kind of go through those data points, and I think, there's no way that guy's number six. Like, that just doesn't sound like someone who's going to come in at six in the power rankings. But there's a couple of things that stopped me from putting him above the players in front of him. And I couldn't get past those things. So first of all, I'll say this right now. There are three players directly above him. His head-to-head record against those three players combined is 1-11. So he hasn't really beaten these players. That's one thing. He also doesn't have a big title. Everyone above Ruud in the power rankings not only has a big title, has multiple. Now, all that said, if he had just continued the positive momentum in Rome, I assure you he would have been higher. No doubt. Kecmanovic, to me, is a pretty concerning loss. Now, there was a back injury there, but he's playing Geneva, so it's nothing serious. Now, maybe he can right the ship in Geneva and, you know, you start to feel better about him. He has in the past, you know, the past 2 years, I believe he's played Geneva. I'm sorry I didn't check this, so hopefully I don't have this wrong, but I believe he's played Geneva the past 2 years when he's gone on to make the final in Paris. So it's something that he's used to, and playing 3 weeks in a row has been no problem for him. But look, here's how I would really defend it. Here's how I would defend the Ruud placement of six. There are only two guys who jumped him from last week. So he lost first round in Rome. The two guys who jumped him, who passed him, had positive results in Rome. Did some things in Rome that boosted their stock. And, you know, that's it. So Ruud at number six feels weird to me. Not going to lie. But hey, that's just how the cookie crumbled. Coming in at number five is Novak Djokovic, who drops four spots after yet another concerning performance against Alejandro Tabilo. He is playing Geneva, so he does have a chance to go into the French Open in the final power rankings with a better position. As we stand right now, I'm starting with kind of the positive, the big picture, the reason he's as high as he is in the power rankings. Novak Djokovic has won seven of the last 11 slams he's played. And if you want to say, Gil, don't talk to me about way back then. Don't talk to me about 2021 and 2022. I don't care. Okay, let's skew it more recent. He's won four out of his last six. Is that better? Is that recent enough? Two out of the last four French Opens, Novak has won. Who are the losses to? The greatest clay court player of all time. The two losses are to Rafael Nadal. So that's why he's five. The 2024 results are why he's not higher. You know, the results this year just anchor him down. No titles, no top 10 wins, a couple of bad losses to Nardi and Tabilo. And then even the losses that are, you know, losses to top players are not necessarily great if you look at some of the head-to-heads. Like, first ever loss to Rude, first ever loss to Demonor. So, you know, it's been a while since we've seen Djokovic play his best tennis from start to finish at an event. I thought Monte Carlo was somewhat positive. I mean, again, he was in position going into Rome, in my opinion, to be as high as maybe number one on the power rankings, right? I mean, that's quite obvious because coming into Rome, I had him at number one in the power rankings. And as we kind of move forward, I'll explain why the players who have leaped him. But yeah, he moves down four spots after the loss to Tabilo, because I just thought Rome was going to be really, really important just to complete the full picture for Djokovic. Because what was the missing puzzle piece? The missing puzzle piece was recent form, right? A good win, recent. That's kind of what you needed to see. But with that missing, you kind of have a big hole in the full picture that is the current state of Novak Djokovic, even from a data-driven perspective. Let us go on now to number four. It is Carlos Alcaraz, who drops just one spot. Alcaraz has had a clay court season that was, you know, completely hijacked by the forearm injury. It affected him from start to finish, missing Monte Carlo, playing Madrid, probably at less than 100%, considering the fact that he pulled out of Rome. He has been hitting for over a week. He has traveled to Paris. But obviously, there is nothing about this clay swing, nothing, that inspires confidence. In the bigger picture, there has been a stunning lack of data for Alcaraz at Monte Carlo and Rome for health reasons. He just hasn't really been healthy for these tournaments. And he's obviously young, so there's less opportunities, there's less years of data that kind of go into it. But Madrid, he's won twice. Barcelona, he won last year. Madrid is altitude. You know, Barcelona isn't. He's had some golden swing results. He's done really well on the slowest hard court on the tour, which is Indian Wells. It's an interesting resume for Alcaraz overall. Obviously, finishes 2 years ago, year-end number one, finishes last year-end number two. There's no doubt that he has, you know, cemented his status as someone who is, generally speaking, going to be in the elite ranks and contend for every big title. And obviously, he's got two majors to his name already. He's won slams in back-to-back years. So, like, you look, again, these are big-picture things, but they're things you have to look at to justify Alcaraz being at number four when he hasn't had any clay results that are positive this year. Now, recent Roland Garros appearances. Lost to Zverev in the quarters in 2022, lost to Djokovic in the semis last year. To me, no shame in that. Both of those matches were learning experiences. They weren't brilliant performances for, you know, different reasons, but at least he's shown that he can kind of go deep at Roland Garros, just lacked that big win. Slam consistency for Alcaraz has been somewhat underlooked. I believe it's been an underrated aspect of his young career that since becoming a top 10 seed, his worst loss at a slam is to Sinner, ranked 13th at the time at Wimbledon. That is his worst loss since entering the top 10. Larger picture form, also a concern for me. Indian Wells is his only final since Cincinnati last year. He is 6-7 against top 10 players since Wimbledon last year. 6-7 against the top 10. That's a pretty normal record for a top 10 player against fellow top 10ers. But it's not Alcaraz-like. It's not the elite pace that we've seen him keep before against top 10 players. Usually there's just a few players in the top 10 who actually have good win rates against fellow top 10 players. There have been periods of time where that's been Alcaraz. But really, over the last, you know, again, since Wimbledon last year, which, what is that? We're looking at an 8-month period. That has not been the case. So Alcaraz kind of being buoyed off of really 2020, you know, last year's results mainly. And then, you know, this year, I guess being salvaged, he'd maybe be lower if he didn't win Indian Wells. I don't know. Tough to say. It's a tough one. These next couple are tough. Okay, coming in at number three is Jannik Sinner. Again, he moves down one spot. Somewhat similar story to Alcaraz here. Technically, Sinner had a 6-1 record for this clay season. Two wins over players that I had as next out, Runa and Khachanov. There's a lack of matches because of the hip injury, a withdrawal in Madrid, a withdrawal in Rome before the tournament even started. It is still not clear if he is going to play Roland Garros. Reports came out of Italy that a doctor recommended that he rest and that he didn't play. But we also know that he has been hitting in Monte Carlo. The decision, it appears, has not been made yet. Let's see what happens. There is less recent clay results if you compare it, not recent, historical clay results if you compare it to an Alcaraz. He has never won a big title on clay. He has made only one Roland Garros quarterfinal, but that was 4 years ago back in 2020. It's been a while. The reason he is above Alcaraz, the reason he is above Djokovic, the reason he is number three is because he's been the best tennis player in the world in the last 6 months. He has won 11 out of his last 13 matches against top five opponents. He is on a 28-match win streak against players outside the top 20, as long as you don't count his walkover against, that was against Felix. As long as you don't count that as a loss, which I don't. Since the U.S. Open last year, this is crazy, he has only lost a completed match before the semis once, Ben Shelton in Shanghai. He's been a shoo-in to make the semifinal since the U.S. Open last year. So, if he plays, given the fact that he's been dynamite, I feel like that's enough for him to be at three, even if there's not a lot of clay stuff there to kind of feel great about. Look, as you've heard from what I just said about Djokovic, what I just said about Alcaraz, what I just said about Sinner, by the way, those are the three players who are a combined 11-1 against Casper Ruud. Obviously, with Rome, there is an opportunity to overtake these guys with positive results because none of them were going to really make any progress when they're rehabbing and hitting at home. There was an opportunity to overtake them, and a couple of players took that opportunity. Coming in at number two is your Rome champion, Alexander Zverev, who jumps up a sizable four spots after winning Rome. He did not have a super tough path. Fritz, Nico Jarry, those were his best wins, so number 9 and number 10 in the power rankings. But still, erased what was an underwhelming clay season up until that point. He had four wins in three events up until Rome. He beats everyone in his path. And, you know, it still is winning Rome. It's no matter what the path was, it still is winning Rome. And then you look at the big picture. Incredibly solid clay court history and credentials. Three straight Roland Garros semifinals. Four clay Masters titles, which is better than anybody else in his generation. So the combination of winning Rome, past Roland Garros final weekend consistency, at least getting there, the consistency of getting there, and then the unrivaled number of big clay titles compared to other players in his generation. I mean, Zverev ends up at number two for those reasons. Now, watch Monday Match Analysis if you want my fully fleshed out opinion, on his chances to win. I did a segment on it. I'm not going to kind of repeat what I said there. But check that out if you haven't. I do want to take this time to make one amendment to my thoughts about Zverev on that MMA segment. I said that he basically needs to win a slam for me to feel good about his nerve management skills, which is kind of the thing that I get caught up with on Zverev. I want to amend that. It's not fully true. It's not. If he plays brave tennis and executes his game fully in a big semifinal or a final at a major, that can change the way I see him. That has happened in the past with me, where I see a player who might lose to a great player with the ability to beat him, right? Let's say Alcaraz or Djokovic or someone like that plays at their best and beats Zverev, but I love the performance from Zverev, especially on big points, even if he lost them. That might be enough for me to actually change the way I look at Zverev, and then maybe at some point in the future feel really good about picking him to win a major. So I just wanted to amend that. And now, without further ado, coming in at number one is Stefanos Tsitsipas, who, like Zverev, moves up four spots. Again, Tsitsipas came into Rome above Zverev. And just like Zverev, I have him leaping Djokovic, Alcaraz, Sinner. I have them leaping. Oh, and Ruud. So Ruud, Djokovic, Alcaraz, Sinner. I have Zverev and Tsitsipas leaping those four guys. None of whom, you like that grammar? Whom? None of whom had, all of them didn't play Rome or had a negative result at Rome. Let me just get into Tsitsipas, and then I'll talk about why I have some people over some people in more depth. Steph hadn't had a good 52 weeks until this clay season hit. He was outside the top 10, but he finishes this clay swing 13-3. What I'm about to say is a big deal for me. That Monte Carlo run was far more impressive than any run I saw from anyone else this clay season. He beat Zverev, Khachanov, Sinner, healthy Sinner, Ruud. Now, you could argue that he's lost his form in the last two events since Monte Carlo final, Monte Carlo champion, Barcelona final. I'd have to disagree. Madrid was his third tournament off back-to-back finals. So this is like a Rublev situation where, like, yeah, you do have to take context into account sometimes and just throw a tournament out. He lost to Thiago Monteiro, who served really well in that match. I don't care. I just don't care about that. Then in Rome, you might say, well, he lost in the quarterfinals. He lost to Nicolas Jarry. That's not good. Look, yes, but he beat Struff. He beat Norrie. He beat Demonor. These are three pretty quality wins. And I'm not saying that's what that makes him deserves. I'm not saying because of that he deserves to be number one. What I am saying is a whole lot better than Ruud did, a whole lot better than Djokovic did, a whole lot better than Sinner and Alcaraz can say when it comes to Rome. Like, that's why it's not as if Tsitsipas had a negative Rome. To me, he had a positive Rome. You look at that Jarry match, by the way. Nico was unbelievably good. He's a bad matchup for Tsitsipas historically. Even coming into that match, he had a winning head-to-head against Tsitsipas. And Steph still had every chance to win. It was a razor-tight, epic three-setter. So I just don't buy that Rome was like a stock. To me, it's not a stock-down tournament for Steph. That's all I'm saying. So great clay court season because, you know, Madrid was a negative. But other than that, all three tournaments, I felt pretty good about the result for Tsitsipas. Former Roland Garros finalist. Last four have been semifinal, final, fourth round, quarterfinal. So I'll leave it at that with Steph. But let me delve further into why Tsitsipas over Zverev. Most of the stuff I look at favors Sasha. Better season overall, mostly because of the Australian Open. I think I like Zverev's Roland Garros resume just a hair better. It's close. But I think I'd rather the more semifinals than the one final and a little bit more uneven results. I think I'd rather Zverev's. And Rome is more recent than Monte Carlo. Now, what Tsitsipas has is more quality wins this clay swing than Zverev. But they kind of all came in that Monte Carlo run. At the end of the day, here's what it came down to. It's very close between them. Like, to me, it's very close between them. And because it was so close, I had to go to something that I normally don't go to when it comes to the power rankings. But again, I just couldn't ignore the head-to-head thing. Tsitsipas beat Zverev in Monaco this year. That is a clay head-to-head this year. He is 5-1 against Sasha on clay. And in 2021, he did it in Paris, best of five. So yeah, kind of a bit of a tiebreaker for me. And to me, they had similar clay swings, a little bit better of a clay swing for Tsitsipas, but better season for Zverev, slightly better Roland Garros resume for Zverev. You see how close it is? And that's why I go to the head-to-head. Why Sinner and Alcaraz over Djokovic? I want to explain that because I had Djokovic over Sinner and Alcaraz coming into Rome. And you might say, how did Alcaraz and Sinner leap Djokovic by not playing Rome? That's strange. Very simple for me. No data is actually better than negative data. No data is better. Like, part of the reason I had Djokovic so high for so long, I had him at number one because we lacked data, especially after Monte Carlo, because he pulled out of Madrid. So I was really kind of relying on Rome to give us some data on Novak, and he gave us some negative data, and it was already very close between those three. So that negative data bumped him down. I'd rather no data, frankly. Now, of course, Sinner Alcaraz pulls out of Roland Garros in the final edition of the power rankings. They'll be gone, and Djokovic will have leaped them. So let me end this with, where do I disagree with my own power rankings? Where do I disagree? Again, once the draw comes out, that matters. Matchups, play styles matter. But I'm not talking about those things. I'm actually talking about just like what looks off to me. There are three things that I point to. One, in my opinion, Ruud is likely to make the final weekend. There is so much uncertainty that I think a few quarters are going to open up, and the trust level with Ruud is really high. That's a bad loss against Kecmanovic, but he usually doesn't screw up opportunities to beat players who he's better than. And for that reason, I think it's likely we'll see Ruud in a semifinal in Paris. And, you know, having him at six in the power rankings doesn't really reflect that. So that's one area where I kind of disagree with myself. The other area is Zverev at number two. I do think there are players below Zverev in the power rankings that, again, in my opinion, are more likely to win the French Open. Objective, data-wise, no. Zverev deserves to be at number two. I stand by that. But just my opinion, there are some players who are more likely to win. Then there's one other. Now, this isn't a hot take, but I wouldn't be shocked if Rune makes a quarterfinal run. In fact, I'd be less surprised personally if Rune was in the quarterfinal than Nicolas Jarry. I might even be less surprised. Like, I almost might, again, Fritz, Medvedev, I think among the people outside the top seven, so everybody below Rublev, Rune has more clay court potential than probably everybody below Rublev. So the expectation is off of him at this point. I think he's probably going to be in a better spot mentally just for that reason. Now, that's not sustainable. You can't live off of that as a tennis player. But I do think, you know, Holger kind of gets that underdog mentality. And his ability is definitely above what he's shown. So that's another thing where I look at the power rankings and it's like, okay, does Holger have a higher ability than some of the guys above him? Yes, I do think that's true. So get involved in the comments. I think, let me say this. This is the hardest year by far to do the RG power rankings because the top three who have the best track records in a lot of ways just haven't put results on the board this clay season. So you're left with a lot of tough decisions. Let me know what you think. Hope you enjoyed. Don't forget to subscribe. I will see you next time.
Rack up the deals on everything summer at Nordstrom Rack and get brands you love up to 60% off. Vince, Kate Spade New York, Steve Madden, Madewell, Nike, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Just in dresses, tops, shorts, sandals, sneakers, denim, luxury bags, and sunglasses. Rack up the deals today and save up to 60% on summer at your Nordstrom Rack store.
Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
Hey, Cam, mind sending me over our new Wi-Fi password?
Oh, sorry, Mitch, you can't be trusted.
What?
It's your phone. It's different than mine.
Cam! And I thought I was a judgy one.
No, it's just messages between different devices aren't encrypted.
Okay. Since when do you know about encryption?
I know what encryption is, and it's because I'm the last line of defense against any would-be Wi-Fi thieves.
Cam, come on.
Okay, fine. I'll send it somewhere more private.
Thank you.
Safely send messages between different devices. On WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, afoxolaner, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunchberries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LaFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunchberry.
No!
No one steals my Crunchberries.
I think you mean my Crunchberries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.